issues affecting Asia's animals and the stories of the people working on their behalf. We'll be taking you on a tour of what's been happening lately in the animal protection space around Asia, and also bringing you updates from our huge network of animal protection organizations and our many working groups. Welcome to the Asia for Animals podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another podcast episode from Asia for Animals Coalitions. I'm Ngoc Anh Nguyen, Lead Coordinator of the Policy Coalitions at IFA. Today, we are honored to have with us Rainer Kreiwitz, Co-Executive Director of Animal Policy International. Rainer is an entrepreneur and a longtime animal advocate with a background in international business, focusing on economics, finance, sustainability, and stakeholder communications. He has researched sustainability practices in Nordic businesses and served as a program manager at the Food Innovation Summit, the largest alternative protein conference in the Nordics. Join us today as we unravel Animal Policy International's impactful strategies for promoting responsible imports, creating fair conditions for local farmers, and advancing higher animal welfare standards in regions that need it most. Rainer, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, and thank you so much for having me.
Now, let's jump right into it, Rainer. Animal Policy International is doing remarkable work towards promoting responsible imports, creating fairer conditions for farmers, and elevating animal welfare standards in low-welfare countries. Can you share some of the strategies you are employing to achieve these goals?
Of course, happy to. But I think before it would be useful to speak more about the background of how Animal Policy International got started. So we are a very new organization, launched just in April 2023. So we were started through the incubation program of charity entrepreneurship. And if you haven't heard of charity entrepreneurship, then it's an incubation program based in the United Kingdom. And every year they do a significant amount of research to find out what are the most impactful areas to work in for new charities. And they focus on both animal charities and also charities that help humans and their health. So when Charity Entrepreneurship was doing research for our cohort, they identified an issue around animal products and the imports of animal products. So they found out that animal welfare legislation is significantly different across different countries in the world. And those with higher standards, they require the standards to be applied only on local produce and not imports. And that is an issue because many consumers in those countries think that they are buying higher welfare products, but at the same time, they're actually fueling suffering in other regions in the world. So to give an example of what means higher welfare or lower welfare standards, you can imagine being a mother pig who spends her entire life in a cage so small that she cannot even turn around. So basically being confined in a sow stall. Or being a piglet of this mother pig who has to go through excruciating procedures such as tail cutting, teeth cutting, and castration that are very often performed without any use of painkillers. So in a country like New Zealand that has higher welfare standards, many practices like this are eliminated or minimized. But the country is still importing significant amount of products from other countries that are allowing these procedures, causing significantly more pain and suffering to the animals involved. So we see that it's not sustainable in the long run to increase standards in one country and not apply them to all products that are sold on the market. If we continue with the same pig industry example, in New Zealand now, approximately 2/3 of pig meat consumed in the country is imported, and most of it to lower standards than those that in New Zealand are produced. So instead of having this impact, desired impact of higher legislation, that animals live better lives, they experience less suffering, it can have negative externality by shifting the production from higher welfare country to low welfare country. And that's something we don't want to see happening. And we say that it might be a significant barrier for improving welfare internationally moving forward. So solution for this problem is extending animal welfare standards in higher welfare country also to imports. And interestingly, we see it as a potential win-win for both animals, animal advocates, and local farmers. So, and for local farmers, we see that it creates a more level playing field for them to compete in. And lastly, it also caters for consumer expectations in those countries. And in our theory of change, we see that applying equal or equivalent animal welfare standards on all products on a country's market like New Zealand, it can incentivize producers in other countries to increase their standards in order to keep exporting to a country like New Zealand. So, New Zealand is our first country of focus, and many of the products that are coming into New Zealand are coming from different Asian countries, such as Thailand, China, Vietnam, and the level of legislation is lower there. So, we see that there's lots of incredible work that countries or groups in those countries are already doing in improving the lives of animals. And we're very happy to be part of the movement to create change in those countries by applying additional incentives from other countries internationally. And to give maybe a bit more examples of like similar work done before or why we think it's doable is many of us have heard of different import restrictions that have been applied to countries' imports based on concerns over animal welfare. So some of them are probably most known are import bans on fur products. But there are also some more specific ones. So in the EU, there's a slaughter regulation that requires imported meat products to cater or have been slaughtered to specific standards outlined by the EU. There is Proposition 12 recently in the United States when in California, where there was a ballot initiative where people voted for increasing animal welfare standards inside the state and also applying all the same measures to all products sold on the market. And what we want to achieve is that a country, a whole country, would apply its animal welfare standards to imported products. And so far, there isn't any specific example of a country doing that. There are different smaller case studies, as we mentioned, like the Proposition 12 or different other import restrictions, but there is none that would apply all standards to all imports. And that's something we want to achieve or say that would be a next step in the legislation that could happen under the WTO rules. And the WTO, so World Trade Organization, had its own rules, what can be done and what cannot be done in international trade. But we see that there are enough case studies suggesting that animal welfare does fall into
the public morals exemptions for certain rules and can be applied by country if people in those countries care about animals and think that they should deserve better lives. So to sum up what Animal Policy International is doing, so we are creating evidence, evidence-based through reports, we produce legal opinions, polling, and introducing all of this evidence for this kind of law change to decision makers in those countries.
That is a very comprehensive strategy. Thank you, Rainer. Now, as you navigate through various regions with different regulations, cultural practices, and political climates, what challenges do you anticipate for Animal Policy International, and how do you plan to overcome them?
As an advocacy organization, probably one of the biggest issue we work on is convincing politicians. So in our case, we see that the public wants a change. We did polling in June 2023 that showed that 83% of New Zealanders think that the standards that are applied to New Zealand should also be applied to imported products. We see that local farmers, some of the local farmers support it. For example, the Pig Industry Association in New Zealand was also doing their own petition on this topic because they feel that they are very much negatively impacted by the low welfare imports. And now the main challenge is to ensure that politicians and law people who are part of the lawmaking process understand this issue and are capable of acting upon it. And some of the main issues that politicians have highlighted is, first of all, as I briefly mentioned before, is the rules of the World Trade Organization. We know that it is not 100% clear how the interpretation of the law would be in this case, because when the WTO rules were designed, they were not designed with in mind some of the contemporary issues like we have right now, including climate change and animal welfare. But we do have case studies suggesting that applying animal welfare standard restrictions on imports based on animal welfare standards could comply with the rules. And we see that the WTO rules have evolved, or the interpretation of them have evolved over time enough for animal welfare to be a valid concern to set the restrictions based on public moral stance. And right now we are in the process of commissioning a legal opinion from our lawyer to highlight how this could be legal under the current rules. And step further from WTO, our of the trading partners. So if a country like New Zealand would apply their standards also to imports, then of course there are international stakeholders that are impacted by this kind of law change. So at the moment, we don't know exactly what reaction would be, but some of the affected partners might not be in favor of it. So this means that the New Zealand government could face some opposition from the trading partners. However, I don't think it's a very significant issue, since exporters in those countries that I mentioned before are typically large corporations that have resources to change. And we are currently conducting a supply chain study into understanding what products from what producers are going into New Zealand. So many of the producers that are, for example, producing chicken meat in Thailand, and there are large international corporations that are already complying with various standards from other corporate buyers, such as Tesco or KFC in other countries. So having this example of corporate commitments being successful in transforming some of the industries in lower welfare countries is a good sign that a country demanding certain standards to be met is also economically feasible for those producers to comply with. And they also see that as an opportunity for farmers in those regions as well, because we see that in this world, animal welfare standards and just concern over animal welfare is becoming more and more important. That's something consumers think of. And investing into better practices right now gives an opportunity for those producers to keep exporting not only to New Zealand, but potentially other regions as well, and buyers who would demand higher standards in the future now or in the future.
Thank you, Rainer, for shedding light on this area. Now, let's turn our attention to the support and collaboration. Speaking of which, what kinds of support do you need to execute your plans? How can a network of animal protection organizations like Asia for Animals support Animal Policy International in its missions? What specific types of support do you envision considering our network of animal protection organizations in Asia?
Yeah, our work is, as you might understand, has very international reach. So that is why cooperation with FIN organizations is very important in this sphere, because we ourselves cannot keep up with all what's happening in different jurisdictions and cultures around animal welfare. And that's why having partners who understand it better is very important. So I mentioned that our current focus is in New Zealand, and we also start some work in the United Kingdom. So in those countries, we are wanting to push the legislation to also apply to imports. And the main Asian countries that are currently selling their produce to New Zealand or UK include Thailand, Vietnam, and China. So we are very much interested in and looking to connect with groups, especially in those countries, to learn more about their supply chains, such as who are the producers, who they sell to, what are the standards in those countries, and any kind of evidence on seeing the trends in consumer behavior and how the legislation has changed over time. So yeah, we very much look for and to connect with those groups or even in other countries in the region to learn what the kind of animal welfare standards are there, if there are potential sellers also in the future to higher welfare countries. More specifically, in the future, it might also be useful to have groups from those affected countries to write open letters to New Zealand or UK governments urging for the change. And yeah, as I said, we are very happy to work with other organizations affecting change for animals in Asia in general. And we hope that our strategy will be useful in contributing to the fight to free animals from factory farms.
Thank you for a very detailed answer to that question. It was very insightful. Shifting focus a bit, promoting fairer market conditions for local farmers is an aspect of your ask. How do you propose ensuring this while maintaining high animal welfare standards?
Yeah, that is a very interesting question. So when we speak with farmers in New Zealand, they generally care about the animals. And we see that there is often common ground to be found between farmers and animal advocates. So the difference with farmers is that they have different incentives they need to kind of comply with. So in addition for caring for animals, they have this economic part to their work. So they need to remain competitive in the economic environment they are currently operating in. So they do have these competing priorities on their table. And by applying equivalent standards to all products on the market, we create more playing field for those local producers, and it can reduce some of the financial pressure that comes from competing with low welfare products. So in the long term, we see that such a legislation can make farmers less against improvement in animal welfare standards. So far, when different groups have campaigned for different bans or improvements in animal welfare standards in pretty much any country, farming industry has been the most loud stakeholder against it. Because that's especially problematic if they have to compete with lower welfare imports. So if the new legislation is applied only to their production. And if they can get the legislation also applied to imports, it means that local farmers in those higher welfare regions have less reason to try to stop the progress, because there won't be the same unequal playing field. They need to comply with certain standards, but the imports don't.
Thank you for your input. Looking at the broader picture, what more do you think organizations like the World Organizations for Animal Health, WOA, or the World Trade Organization, WTO, should do to ensure high welfare standards globally? And any thoughts on WOA's work in the Asia-Pacific region on this topic?
Yeah, World Trade Organization is definitely a very big stakeholder for our work or protecting animals in trade internationally in general. So as I mentioned, with the current form and the current rules of the World Trade Organization, we can see several case studies that show that animal welfare is a valid concern to implement trade restrictions. So one example being the EC seal case. So in 2009, the European Union banned importation of and marketing of seal products inside the EU. And very soon after that, Canada requested consultations with the European communities being unhappy with the new law. And then the WTO appellate body had to make a decision whether it is lawful or unlawful for a European community to implement this policy. And they upheld that the EU seal regime is necessary to protect public morals, and using the CAT Article 20A to support it. And it was a very significant case because it confirmed that animal welfare is a concern that's a legitimate reason for WTO members to regulate trade. So before that, there was no public morals exemption used due to concern over animal welfare, and that was a very important case to have this concern implemented on over animal welfare concerns. And another aspect that some of people in trade say that restriction over low welfare imports is not legal, because one cannot discriminate based on the production process if the end product is the same. So we can have the example of eggs. If egg is produced in a cage system or a cage-free system, the final product is literally the same, but how it was produced is different. So until sometime, it was there wasn't a case to be made, or it wasn't proved that you can discriminate based on production method. It was, you can only discriminate or have different requirements if the final product itself is different. But there is also a very important case study in the WTO, which is called the U.S. shrimp case. So in 1989, the U.S. Congress passed a law requiring that all shrimp importing nations need to be certified as having sea turtle protection programs that are compatible with those in the United States. And similarly as the previous case, several countries requested consultations with the states, not being happy with the law. And after the U.S. revised some of these guidelines, and finally the appellate body found that the ban was justified under the rules. And that case was specifically important because the WTO allowed the U.S. to restrict imports based on the production process and not the product itself. And that is something we see is very important in the low welfare import sphere, because very often the products are almost identical, but how they're produced is different. And that is the basis how we would allow some products in and some products not. So there are these different case studies that suggest that restricting imports based on standards would be compliant with the rules. And we need to see more willingness on political level to use those precedents and protect animal welfare and public morals through this kind of trade restriction. And yeah, for WTO generally in the a bit longer term, many stakeholders see that WTO is in need of reform because many of the rules go back several decades. And issues such as animal welfare were not topical during signing the General Agreement of Tariffs and Trade in 1947 after the Second World War, or during the founding of WTO with the Marrakesh Declaration in 1994. So there is definitely a need of a reform that would adapt the rules to contemporary issues, such as rising concern over animal welfare, climate change, and others that are similar to these. And you also asked about World Organization for Animal Health. And yeah, we think that they are doing very important work. So far, we have not discussed any specific collaboration plans with them, but it is likely to happen moving forward because, yeah, as I mentioned, being connected to international groups is very important for our type of work to succeed.
That is a very detailed explanation, and thank you so much, Rainer. Let's move on to a crucial aspect of our discussions. Rainer, what's the way forward for Animal Policy International? Where do you see the organizations in 1 to 3 years, and what's the long-term vision for the next 10 years?
Yeah, so right now we are a very new organization, just under 1 year old, and our sole focus is working on low welfare imports. And in addition to New Zealand and the United Kingdom that I mentioned we are currently operating in, there are other higher welfare regions such as Switzerland or the EU that currently apply their standards only to local production. And yeah, we want to change that and make it a new norm that animal welfare standards are applied to all products placed on the market. We don't know how long it takes, but the intersection of trade and animal welfare remain our focus area for the foreseeable future at this moment, for sure.
Thank you for sharing with us and for your very illuminating insights and the in-depth discussions on Animal Policy International's crucial missions. Your knowledge and thoughtful responses have given us valuable perspectives on the organization's impactful work. And for our listeners eager to stay connected and learn more about Animal Policy International, be sure to check out their official website at animalpolicyinternational.org or their LinkedIn profile. There, you'll discover the latest updates, initiatives, and ways to get involved in promoting higher animal welfare standards. Rainer, we appreciate your time and expertise today, and we are excited about the potential for future conversations to delve deeper into the advancements and achievements of Animal Policy International. To our listeners, a big thank you for joining us, and keep that curiosity alive, stay informed, and continue exploring the critical issues shaping our work.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was very enjoyable to talk about this issue.
Bye-bye, and until next time, take care and stay engaged.
Thanks for listening. You can find everything you need to know about our work and connect with us at asiaforanimals.com. Tune in for the next episode. Asia for Animals Coalition, a united voice for Asia's animals.